Today on Faithfully Fantasy.
I have read a theory. This is not my theory. This is on Reddit. Venin are not the bad guys, but the dragons are the bad guys. Did the Venin lose something? There is a quote somewhere else in Iron Flame which says the continent was never ours to begin with. Mm-hmm. And you're supposed to think that's humans and that the continent belonged to the dragons. But is there a sneaky suspicion that the continent belonged to the Venin? How do they get the riders to be quiet?
Rabbi, if I may be, because Nella was trying to save Brennan, he turned into a Venin. So then Nella turned into a Venin.
He was the one killing it. His own rider.
Yes.
Hello and welcome to Faithfully Fantasy,
the husband and wife podcast talking all things Iron Flame. I'm Sean.
I'm JC, and today we're diving into chapter 17 to 20 of Iron Flame.
Yeah, we rejoin a lovesick Violet as Varys is doing all within his power to keep her and Zayden apart. We get power rising in her as she is subjected to Markham's lies. Tern getting Varys on his knees after showing Solas, who is the dragon boss. For me, a cast iron receipt that Mummy Sorengale is / was a Venin. A harrowing reliving of Liam's death. And the mother of all kisses to win Zayden his fight against Mira. That's what you're in for this week.
Okay, so we then jump into chapter 17.
Yeah, let's get straight into it. So the epigraph.
Yes.
Many historians choose to ignore the sacrifices made by both humans and dragonkind to establish Navarre under the First Wards in favour of praising the spirit of unification. It would be remiss not to mention the losses suffered, both in terms of the ancestral hatching grounds of each dragon breed and the civilians who did not survive the continent-wide migration that resulted from the opening of Navarre's borders, of those lost when we closed them. The Sacrifice of Dragonkind by Major Deandra Naveen.
That was a very long epigraph.
I know, they're all long this week. Every single one, apart from a really short one.
Yes, but
there's one really short one and the others are basically just paragraphs and paragraphs.
The only thing that caught my attention was like this sacrifice made by humans and dragonkind. And then there's so many stories that just choose to ignore the sacrifices. And it's just like wondering what other sacrifices are there that we have no clue.
I think Major Deandra Naveen is a little bit of a like, I'm better than everyone because I'm the only one who remembers the sacrifices. Yeah, I think the ancestral hatching grounds are really interesting. So we know the hatching grounds of the Black Dragons is at Tirindor.
Yeah.
We know that the Greens are at Buzgaeth.
Yes.
Do we know anything else?
The orange could be in the Esben Mountains.
Yeah, I think it's in a textbook. And the oranges, the original hatching ground was in the Esben Mountains, but they have a network of caves and they're so unpredictable. They just keep changing their hatching ground. I have a suspicion that the blue dragons are from Caldea because of the blue dragons and royalty and blue blood and being royalty and the royal... The royal family live in Caldea. I don't know if that'll ever be confirmed, but I do feel like it would be quite fitting for the blue dragons to be in Caldea. And then we've got brown and red, and we don't know. Yeah. So there's Lucerus province and testing me now, Deaconshire.
And also we believe as well that seven there was in the Barrens.
We really do, don't we? I know there's another theory that the Seventh Den is on the Isle Kingdoms, and it could be.
Yeah.
Just have a real suspicion that General Darrenmore drained the land around the Seventh Den, and that's what freaked everyone out, and that's why they tried to protect the rest of them before they
were consumed.
Yeah. It would be weird, though, because looking at the map, you've got all the dragons on the west of the continent. Then you've got a strip of land, which is Poromiel. and you've got the griffins there, and then there's the barons. So it would be weird if all the dragons were on the west side, but one den was on the east, and in the middle you have the griffins. So I get it. I get that it's a weird theory, but I'd still like it as a theory that they're connected to General Darrymore, and he was potentially a seventh rider, and I like that. So I have read a theory. This is not my theory. This is on Reddit. That Venin are not the bad guys. That the dragons are the bad guys. I don't want to believe this, but I do love it. It's super unhinged. This begs the question, did the Venin lose something? So there is a quote somewhere else in Iron Flame which says, the continent was never ours to begin with. And you're supposed to think that's humans and that the continent belonged to the dragons. But is there a sneaky suspicion that the continent belonged to the Venin and it was actually Navarre and the dragons that were bad? I don't believe it, but I do wonder. It kind of made me think, did the Venin lose something there as well? Yeah,
what it makes me struggle about this theory is because Rebecca Jarros, she used that already, that card with Fenrirton. When you start reading For Wind for the first time, Fenrirton is the bad guy, he's the traitor, and then boom, turns out that he was the one who was doing the right thing. So if she used the same card again for this, and in reality all the bad guys are the good guys, the book would lose a lot of strength.
So I think that, so I wouldn't put it past Rebecca Jarros, judging by her other books and the twists that she uses. It wouldn't surprise me, but I think that it's more likely that not all Venin are bad, and you've got the Venin that turned for love, and there's a few of them. There's obviously our Shadow Daddy.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Potentially Naylan. There's a group of people that believe Naylan is...
not just power. They're just trying to do something greater than them.
Because they can't... The power that they have is not good, not strong enough to save the person they love, so they channel from the source.
Yeah.
I believe Mummy Sorengil is in this camp. And potentially General Darrymore himself. Because I also have a suspicion that he was in love with Lyra. And I think those complex interpersonal relationships is going to play out a lot bigger. So that's the epigraph. I think we have managed to prod at an unhinged theory in there.
Yeah, we haven't even started the chapter straight away.
Straight.
Theory.
So Tern is going to Empyrean about Andana.
I wasn't sure, what it was exactly the reason why he was going there to talk about Andarna, what they can say about it. And later on, when he had this fight with Solas and Varish, and then he's the one who said, I'm the one who speaks for Andarna when she's not here. So we're like, oh, maybe it's that he's just going to the Empyrean to be kind of like a representative of Andarna when she's not there?
Nope. Sorry. He doesn't know that she's a representative.
No, I'm not talking about Seven Day. Tern representing Andarna interests when she is not there. Because the problem was that Varys was asking for Andarna.
Yeah.
And then he said, I speak about Andarna and you're nobody to...
Oh, okay. So I think he went to the Empyrean to stop Varys demanding that she go to flight maneuvers. Because I think he would... Then he was expecting the Empyrean to tell Solas to tell his rider, no, that it's not happening. But it seemed like that didn't happen, or they didn't get the message. But I think he was just going to try and stop it, because he didn't want to get into the situation where he's threatening Solas, because he could get into quite a lot of trouble with the Empyrean, I would imagine, for doing that. Coda's not going to take kindly to it. I'm interested. What happens to the Empyrean when they're all, off? Because Melgrin doesn't stay in the Vale all the time. So what if the Empyrean need to meet? Does Melgrin have to go back to Basgaiath?
I think maybe as long as majority of dragons doesn't need
the
to
quorum.
be... Yeah. doesn't need to be all the sex in the same place. Unless there might be something really important, and then doesn't matter what Mel Green is doing, Kodak business more important. We see Turin going to the Imperium, then we see Imogen as well being kind of like good friend with Violet, asking how are things going. How are the stuff we say that?
Imogen's really sus here, don't you think? I've gone a bit off the rails with this one as well.
I told you that I start to be suspicious about Imogen from Zaydan's point of view in Chapter 27.
Yeah.
And this was another thing that the first time when I was reading it, I didn't get it that much. But after that, Zaydan's point of view, I start to see some stuff about her.
The weird thing for me is that she says, separating you two would be my first move if I was in a position of power.
Yeah.
Most normal people who aren't suspicious would say, separating you two would be my first move if I were them. You would put yourself in the position of the other person.
Yeah.
You wouldn't say, if I was in a position of power. Because that's her. So if she was in a position of power, she would split Violet and Zaydan up. That is suspicious to me. It's the wording. It's really, really weird. And also she says we keep information classified all the time. I get this. This could be just general military chat because it's true. But Varys later uses, I think he uses her a lot on people. I'd like to think she would not do it. But he says later, you could go and get Imogen, but I don't think she would do it on, she would use her signet on Violet. Mm-hmm. She's obviously using her signet on other people, and I think Varys is her trainer, just like Carr is Violet's, and obviously Varys is Dane's trainer as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think she's fighting for Venon. I don't think she's on the side of the Venon. I think she's got her own agenda, and I just don't know what it is yet.
Yes, I definitely believe that she is doing her own business. I say that she followed her own vendetta.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, there's some information about Imogen that we're missing. Maybe something happened to the family. We know so far that her mother and her sister, they got killed because the revolution. We don't know what other things happened to her to make this signet that be like she be able to wipe memories.
Oh, I think so, it's some deep trauma.
Yeah, I think we were going to find out eventually that she got really bad inside story. And that's going to be like the explanation why she is the only one.
Well, they all do, don't they? Like having to witness your parents be executed.
Yeah.
It's just unimaginable. And that is the type of memory you'd want to be wiping. She does give some good advice, though, to talk to friends. She was basically saying that might work for Zaydan to block everybody out, but you don't have to. And she talks to Quinn. And she obviously hasn't told Quinn everything because she does later, but it's quite good advice. And she also says stop worrying about a man when there's a war on, which is really solid advice as well. Zaydan's letters, though, we hear about the fact that his letters go into his life before the rebellion. And she kind of stops and thinks, like, what would it be like if there was no rebellion and he was still in that life? Zaydan wouldn't have been a rider. Oh, necessarily.
Probably he will be in infantry, but he will be engaged to Catriona and maybe marry with her to keep their families together and strong.
Well, no, because he might, if there was no rebellion, he wouldn't have needed the allegiance with.
No, but they do it anyway, just to keep
better
alliance.
Yeah, maybe.
There doesn't need to be a war.
I just don't think it would be with the Flyers. I think it would be another province of Tirindor if Fenn wasn't fighting for the whole continent.
Yeah.
It's interesting. But maybe it's not. It would be boring. There would be no story. And there would be no Zaydan and Violet. So let's not go there. So then we go to Battle Brief. And, well, it's after the conversation with Imogen, isn't it? She says, it looks like your friend needs you. And she's got a notice, a regional notice, that says, in this time of unprecedented violations of our sovereign borders, we count on you, our border villages, to be our eyes and ears. Our safety depends on your vigilance. Do not take in strangers. Your kindness can kill. And it's written in angry capital letters, so people have to pay attention to it. I wonder if they're asylum seekers or if they are... Well, I can't see that they'd be anything else. They're in danger. They're fleeing from towns that are being razed to the ground by dragon-like creatures. Mm-hmm. They just want to be safe.
Yeah, maybe it's just people that have no home, nowhere to go. Yeah. They're being attacked by wyverns. And then when they go to the other people saying we're being attacked by wyverns, then obviously their leadership don't want the people start to know about it. So I said, don't be kind with these people.
They kill them. There was an incident at Samara in chapter 20 that we'll get to. But that's exactly why they killed them. They can't risk the information getting out that there's venom and wyvern.
It's Reed, the one who has this letter. She shows to Violet, which is surprised about it. And then from nowhere, Markham is the one who takes the letter. And he started to give like a butter brief about it. Obviously, when he's talking about it, Violet started to hear all the lies that's coming from this guy. And she started again, feel the power running through, I think she said like through her skin, or started to like feeling this.
Energy buzzing rises to a hum as energy gathers at my skin looking for an outlet.
Yeah, so I was wondering, like, if you're like next to Violet and then she starts doing this kind of thing, you think that you maybe hear like, you know, like a battery or electricity? Mm-hmm. And
like, there's a few things here, isn't there? That Markham is so rich here when he's accusing poor Emil of doing the very thing that he is doing.
Yeah.
They're talking about how there's propaganda and the power of propaganda. And it's really important to keep the borders closed, and he's lying. So no wonder she's getting mad. But it does just highlight to me that what she needs is truth.
Do you think that maybe it's Markham doing it on purpose, just to see how Violet take it? Just to see if maybe Violet is going to be, I don't know, throwing lightning in the middle of the room.
So that's a really cool thought, but no, I think he's so deep in this lie. Like, this is, the kingdom is built on lies, isn't it?
And yeah, I think he's so deep. He definitely knows the Violet and the people who came from Rizan, they know all the truth already.
Do you think?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Huh, that's interesting.
I definitely think that Markham is very close to Eidos because they're like the bodyguards, they're running the operation. So each one had like a different task about it. So I definitely think that Markham will be leading it. He needs to know everything so he can be prepared for any other problem.
Yeah, I think so. I think while General Sorengil is in charge, Markham's actually running the show.
Yeah.
I think he's a lot more powerful than we give him credit for, or that anyone gives him credit for. There's a couple of things that he talks about. He talks about, for the first time, we sent some recon missions. We sent some riders to the villages and towns. What did they actually see when they got there? They would have seen destroyed towns.
Yes.
And then they're lying because he said they came back and those villages are totally intact.
Yeah, of course. They have to lie. They are all in the same boat.
What do they do to the riders? What do they do? How do they get the riders to be quiet? They say it's classified.
Either they make it kind of like a promise as a like rider duty. They can't talk about it. They sound directly ordered. If you say something, you will die.
Yeah, it's classified information.
Or, I don't know if Imogen Signe is the only one there and they have more people there. Just especially.
My memories.
Or is Imogen herself the one that's doing as well for giving some perks? So like you scratch my back and I scratch yours.
That is so weird. I'd never even thought of that. It can't be Imogen, can it?
That would be like...
That would be weird.
Yeah, but she's unpredictable.
Yeah.
And definitely she's doing her own business. So they, I'm sure say that I won't be angry.
We've totally switched. Like a few weeks ago, you were saying Bodhi's the guy.
All of them are treated to say that.
We gotta be right. If we accuse everyone at some point, we gotta be right.
Yes, exactly. All of them are banning or traitors.
Exactly. I think we do have a theory where everyone is banning. So I just wonder, how leadership dealt with them. But that is such a good point. Somebody could be wiping their memories. Ree gives a little bit more of information as well. They've moved another company of infantry into Montserrat, which means that the outpost is at more than capacity. So they're obviously really worried. And that wouldn't just be because there's more civilians crossing. They're Venin are obviously getting closer to the border.
Yes.
That's just a hint for later. We know that because we've read the book, but it's just a hint, a bit of foreshadowing for later in the book.
Yeah.
She has to get out of there. She has to zap the gravel with a bit of lightning. She's completely out of control because of the lies. And she runs to the archives because that's where she feels grounded.
And there's where she finds Yesenia.
And 200 other scribes. 199 other scribes. Yeah. She's supposed to only go on Saturdays. But this is one of my favourite lines of the whole book. And it is such a throwaway line. Nobody else would like pick it up. But it's really relatable. It says, Yesenia comes over, her eyes flaring in unspoken what the fuck as she approaches. And you can just, like, those eyes that are like... Sometimes I do that. Everyone does those eyes, don't they? Every now and again when someone says something that you're just not expecting, you're like...
Oh, yeah.
Oh, you really said that.
Yeah. Like maybe when somebody says something that you tell her before, don't tell to anyone, and then you're like,
Yeah. And also, like, this is another line that is going to resonate with so much of Bookstagram and Book Talk. She cringes as she puts the book back where it doesn't belong. Can you imagine how bad she feels about that as, like, a scribe? She's, Violet's giving her this book that she shouldn't have, and she just like slips it onto the shelf. She's gonna have to find that again later. But the things people get annoyed about on Bookstagram, like cracked spines being flipped round, and loads of stuff that would definitely annoy.
To be honest, I'm one of those that when I'm reading a book, I try not to open it completely.
Yeah,
I just when I sit in there, like, completely wide open.
You need to massage the pages, apparently.
Nah. I just try to open it just enough to read inside.
Oh, no. Books are supposed to be read.
But yeah, I'm still reading it. But it's still in perfect state after reading it.
Enjoy, touched.
Okay.
We'll do a vote on the video.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if there's much more to say here apart from she is putting Yesenia at real risk.
Oh, yes, but it's not going to be the last time.
No, maybe she can make her own choices. She's a strong, independent woman, is Yesenia.
Yes, and she's the only one who survived, for sure.
The funny thing, though, there's a couple of times in these group of chapters where Yesenia is writing about herself, and you've got to remember that. So that line where she says, her eyes flaring in unspoken what the fuck as she approaches.
She's the one.
She's actually translating that. So it must be really funny when she's writing about herself. Yeah, chapter 18.
Okay.
Epigraph. This is another long one, so buckle in. It was only when we pushed the wards to their true limits, extending them far past what we thought was possible and to what I now question as unsustainable, that we defined the borders of Navarre, regretfully knowing not every citizen would benefit from their protection. The Journey of the First Six, a second-hand account by Saga Olson, first curator of the Scribe Quadrant, Basgaeth War College, translated into the common language by Captain Madeline Calaros, 12th curator of the Scribe Quadrant, Basgaeth War College, translated and redacted for academic consumption by Colonel Phineas Cartland, 27th curator of the Scribe Quadrant, Basgaeth War College.
There must be a reason to put that many names and that much stuff right by the end. I can't just think that Rebecca Yarros just put it there just for fun.
No, she's making a point, isn't she, that you cannot trust a word of this epigraph.
Yeah.
You don't know, because it's a second-hand account for the foot. So it wasn't even there. He's writing about the thing it wasn't even there for. Then it was translated by someone, so and things get lost in translation. That's, we know like that
Chinese whispers is a call, isn't it?
Yeah. A telephone, I think, in America. It's called telephone.
Telephone or broken line or
yeah.
Has so many names, yeah.
And then it's translated and redacted for academic consumption. So obviously, I don't know why it would be translated again because it's already in the common language, but. We read this and I can't. I've read it several times. I can't work out what's real and what's not. It was only when we pushed the words to their true limits, extending them far past what we first thought was possible and to what I now question as unsustainable, that we define the borders of Navarre. Regretfully knowing not every citizen would benefit from their protection. Is it just that they didn't really regret it?
Yeah, yes. So basically they just trying to grab as much land as possible, but then when they start to see, okay, this is the limit of the world, we can go further than this. Okay, so now we have the perfect lines for Navarre.
Yeah, that's a good point. It was a land grab, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And so Rebecca's done this on purpose, just to show how bad it is, the information control.
Yes.
And she says we're supposed to question it. When I saw her in London, she was saying, you're supposed to question this. There's two things you're supposed to question. She said there's probably loads more that you're supposed to question, but there was this, and there's also the reason they let so many people, or they want so many people to die, so many cadets
in Basque,
to die.
Yeah, why it's so brutal.
Yeah. So we can't trust that epigraph. Can we trust any written by a scribe?
No. From the last 200 years and the timeline, we can't trust anything from the scribes.
Unless it was written by Daddy Soringel, who I think is mentioned in this chapter. So Zayden is back. He's exhausted and he smells like a dragon. Smells like he's been flying for a few hours. So
well, that's why Violet said, but
I know, and then she goes, you don't really smell. He walks out, but he probably does. And she's got all her books scattered around on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
We've got Colonel Daxton's Guide to Excelling in the Scribe Quadrant. I do think this is a real contender for being her dad. She says it's not as useful as I thought it would be. I think that's probably because she's not a scribe and she's a rider. But she might have thought her dad's guide to excelling in the scribe quadrant might be more useful.
Yeah.
I don't know. There's another one about poisons and that could be him as well. But I'm convinced it's him, or that he's mentioned.
Yeah. Something funny that happened to me, I think a few days ago, doing some work with Olisa and ChatGPT. When I was working and some of the stuff, ChatGPT tell me that Daddy Soringel is colonel. Like, Colonel Soringel. Like, I didn't even mention anything at all. Like, where do you get this information? I don't know if I was confused or anything, because it's not that good anyway, but yeah. I found it like really, like,
did you ask it?
I asked him like, where is this information come from, or give me the page or or the reference when it says Colonel Soringel, but couldn't tell me anything.
No, because it's quite useless.
So yeah, for me it was just, nah, that just maybe it's confusing with somebody else. But I found it interesting.
But I don't believe it.
Mm.
I think we find out here that Lilith did want Violet to have her books.
Mm-hmm.
I think she wanted to leave them there so Violet could go back and get them.
Yeah, so we know that Lilith, she's planning way ahead. So she knew that Violet will need those books for something.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe she thought exactly the same, that maybe she would be able to create wars, or at least give all the information that she needs for this war. So somehow she was helping as well.
I think she was helping, but I also think she's Vernon.
Oh, definitely. There's something. Today I was doing some research and I was reading Fourth Wing, a couple of pages, and was going back to presentation day when they were talking about the fables and all the stuff. And Violet was talking about the story that there was a time when her mother came
back with bloodshot eyes.
Yes, and she was like screaming, and then she took the book away from her because obviously she got really scared about it. But I think the main reason is because she had a book that she shouldn't have because it's dangerous.
She's going to realize her mom's Vernon. Yeah. Yeah. I think she's one of these Vernon that is trying to control it, though, and she turned for love, and I don't think she's a bad Vernon. I think you have good Vernon and bad Vernon.
I guess it all depends on how much you start to channel. If maybe you keep yourself distance and don't channel with the ground, then you can keep going for a little while until maybe something happened and then you had the need.
Anyway, I can't tell you about that until chapter 20, because it's the epigraph in chapter 20 that's my cast iron receipts.
Okay.
For her being a Vernon.
Saida has a bath and come back.
Yeah.
And then he starts to see that she had a lot of books, and those books is basically about the same, the information about the wars. And then he realized that Brennan told her they had a war stone.
Mm-hmm.
And then again, you can see the hate about Satan and Violet's siblings, because the first thing that he says is, I'm going to fucking kill her.
Yeah.
So what is the deal with this? Like,
and first mirror, well, he obviously struggles with Soren girls.
Yeah.
Because
doesn't like the mother, doesn't like the...
Yeah. Well, yeah. But unfortunately for him, he's fallen in love with a younger Soren girl. I think that... So when they talk about wards as a lost magic, was it lost on purpose? I think Violet's dad knew, and that's part of what he was doing. I think he was trying to find the cure for Venom, but he was also looking at the wards. So Violet says that she's got to go to see Jacinia, and he says, I'm coming with you. I'm an incredible judge of character. And that's obviously some intrinsic hints. It is such a risk to the cause for Zayden going with Violet in this moment, because up until now Jacinia doesn't know that it's linked to a potential revolution, a rebellion. As soon as she sees Zayden Ryerson with Violet, she's gonna know that it's possibly something against Navarre, because she's gonna make that connection between Fen Ryerson and Zayden Ryerson. Until now she didn't really know what Violet was doing. Zayden puts himself in that position because he wants to go and see if she trusts him. But Jacinia could freak out because she could think, oh my God, I'm a traitor because I'm helping them. Yeah. Violet's gone with them now.
Well, that was basically the reason that Nolan betrayed Violet, because he believed that she was just helping the traitors on Navarre.
Yeah, one of the reasons, I think.
Yeah.
We think he's in with Varish, don't we, anyway?
Well, you. I think he's just basically another Deinatos. He's trying to do the right thing, but then he is always with the wrong people.
I think he's
a bad guy.
Maybe not. I think you're probably right. He thinks he's doing the wrong things for what he thinks is the right reasons.
Yes.
The squad arrive and ask her if she wants to go to Shantara, and then there's some really awkward internal fighting, which must be so weird. Imagine if you're watching these two people and they're just like staring at each other.
Yeah.
But internally they're having a conversation.
Yeah, but they realize, like, they look like they're fighting. That's something that I didn't get very well, because the first time I was an audible, and an audible sometimes is not very clear when they're just thinking. So you think they're actually having like a fight. And then when Rui said, I think they're fighting, it's like, oh yeah.
Rui offers to help. She says something, Violet says something like, I'll let you know if I need help burying a body later. And Rui's like, I'll do it. I've never lifted anything as heavy as you, but I'm pretty sure my signet could have you in the ground. Do you think it could?
Oh yeah, definitely. She's practicing and the signet gets stronger. So I think eventually she will be able to move really big stuff.
Yeah. I thought it was like a summoning signet for a long time until I read this over and over. She actually can just move things, can't she? She can...
Yes,
so like telekinesis, basically. But it disappears and reappears.
Yeah.
I wondered if she could actually bury a man.
Maybe that was foreshadowing.
Yeah.
And then if something happened and they had to bury a body, then, oh, let me try this.
Just shove him in the ground. Mm-hmm. I think we get some positive Bodhi points here. So Bodhi is telling Zayden everything.
Mm-hmm.
He's told him that Varish is burning her out, punishing her with her signet training. He tells him about her losing control in Battle Breath and having to strike lightning in the courtyard. So Bodhi is a little bit of a spy.
Yeah, Zayden's eyes in Basgan when he's not there.
Yeah.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's kind of like the expectation of Zayden on him.
It is, but also it comes back to the fact that Bodhi doesn't keep anything to himself, does he?
Mm-hmm.
But you'd expect him to tell Zayden everything because that is part of his role. But he lets slip about Kat. It kind of points to Bodhi not being able to keep things to himself. Obviously, we know that's the expectation of Zayden that he would tell him, but he also lets slip about Kat, doesn't he? And then it's like, don't tell him that.
Yeah.
My suspicion about Bodhi is that he has feelings for Violet. So it's a little bit unfounded. But it's like he wants them to be fighting. It's like just giving them little bits of things to fight about.
You think maybe Bodhi says something to say that? Like maybe, yeah, she's really pretty or you're really lucky or whatever. And then say that, no, the Bodhi likes Violet. And that was the main reason when Violet was wearing Bodhi's jacket.
He was angry.
Yes. Yeah. Maybe he knows.
Well, I think the main reason is that he can't trust Zayden.
Violence.
He can't read his mind. He can't tell whether he can trust him.
Yeah, but that's another thing. They're not sure if Bodhi is like constantly contrasting the signal around him or if he actually has to do something.
I think he can sense people's signets and he can do it. And I think he knows that Zayden is intrinsic. Yeah. But we also think that Bodhi can't keep secrets. So who else has he told?
Zayden and Violet go to see Yesenia. And then after they find Nolan, he had lost weight. He looks really tired.
He is looking rough.
Yes. And then he says something really, I was going to say, interesting. Because he says, yeah, working, mending a soul is hard.
Hard work, mending a soul.
Yes. So I think he's talking literally, like mending a soul. And that could be, what, another way to fix somebody that's a venom?
I think, yeah, he literally says it. I think he's tried it before. I think he's tried to mend Lilith Soaringale's soul. Mm.
Do you think maybe he was successful mending Jack's soul, so he turned into human?
No.
But then Jack decided to channel it again because he's still bonded to his dragon, so he can just channel it easily as well.
Mm-hmm.
So he maybe, okay, he was cured, he was not a venom, but then he chose to be a venom again because he took the decision from the first time that he saw Violet bonded with Tarn, that he wants power, he wants...
Maybe. That's quite cool.
Because obviously we're not going to know for now that, yeah, Nolan fixed Jack Barlow's soul and that he was full human, because then Zayden turning into a Brennan is not that impact, because then we're like, oh, well, Nolan did that, then Brennan can do it as well. So it's fine. There's not
But Brennan did say he can't mend magic. I don't know whether that means that magic has corrupted the soul. I think it's all linked. And it's so interesting. I wondered what Caroline Ashton was doing there as well.
Yeah, I was wondering the same, because what was the point? Just to make sure that he remembers or he is himself, maybe?
I honestly think it's just there to give you a hint that he's mending Jack. I don't think she's actually there for a reason, but I don't know. I don't know what her signet is. Maybe she's an air wielder, because they talked previously about him coming out of the room with an air wielder. Maybe she's helping him because she knows that Jack's alive. But I feel like Caroline, I don't know if she's there for a reason or whether she's just been put there so that when we know it's Jack and we go back to reread, we're like, oh my God, how did we not see that coming? You know, like one of those foreshadowing things.
Yeah.
He gives her this, he would never hurt Violet bullshit. And we know Nolan will. Yeah, that whole interaction is so interesting, because I think it hints to the fact that there is hope in terms of mending a soul. But maybe you can never fully mend it. You have to constantly keep mending, like kind of in Verish's interrogations. You break and you're mending, you break, you mended, you break, you mended. And it's not a real cure. It's just like a sticking plaster.
Yeah, I think maybe if it's about a soul, it has to be as well that the person wants to recover his soul as well. So it has to be like a teamwork.
Yeah.
Can't be just being fixed directly by magic.
Like in Harry Potter, where it's regret over what you've done, remorse. My father loved this place. When they get to the archives, she talks to Zayden about how her dad really loved the archives, and he was ecstatic when her mother was assigned there, because it meant that he had the full resources of the archives. So obviously, well, I feel like his purpose was this research that he was doing. Mm-hmm. And he was so excited that he would get access to the archives. I feel like he didn't really care about being a scribe and at this point and moving up the ranks. I think he was just so excited to be able to have access to all that information and possibly the King's Vault.
That's something that I guess all depends on the rank, like who has clearance to go to those information. But yeah, I guess until we don't know exactly what was the rank of the Sorangel, we can't assume that he was able to do that.
Yeah, because I keep flipping between, like, this sentence makes me realize that, makes me think maybe he wasn't that high up and he didn't know until his wife came home pregnant and Vernon. But there's also another thing where Zayden can sign, and that's he says it's more common than speaking Tyrish, and Violet speaks Tyrish, and they keep making a big deal about how Violet speaks Tyrish and her dad taught her Tyrish and Brennan. And it's like he knew they would need it. He knew they would be part of this revolution. Why would he teach them Tyrish? Unless he was Tyrish?
That's another option as well.
We don't know where him or Lilith came from, do we?
No. So far, we just know that they were all Italian Basquiat.
Mm.
And that's it. But maybe he was Tyrish.
Maybe.
I think it was related to Fenrir's son.
No, but maybe Llewellyn. This chapter ends in such an ominous way. He goes, they've fallen out, and the last words they say to each other are in anger. And this is exactly what happened before his dad went to die.
Mm-hmm.
And it makes me think that Zayden regrets that, doesn't he?
Yes.
So you'd think that he would not want to leave on a fight.
Yeah.
It's really uneasy when they fall out and then he goes. I mean, I'm going to say Zayden's not going to die. I don't feel like he's in danger. I feel like he's in a bit of a rough patch, but don't feel like he's in true danger. I mean, not like I feel like Riddick or Sawyer are potentially in danger, Rhiannon.
Yeah.
But still, you don't want to leave on a fight, because that's not...
Yeah. Like I said before, he will learn his lesson after what happened to his father. Mm-hmm. And more when he said that Violet is so important to him, and he's trying to get those three words again.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a good way to get it.
So, chapter 19.
Okay.
We've got a short epigraph. The only one in this section that is short. Dragons do not answer to the whims of men. Colonel Kaori's field guide to dragonkind.
I like Kaori. Straight to the point.
Yeah. It's probably because he dropped his notebook.
So he had no more information. Oh, no, so that was why I remembered.
That was Professor Carr. Yeah.
No, Professor Carr is the one who left a lie on the desk or everywhere.
Professor Kaori. In the squad battle, someone stole his notebook.
Exactly. But yeah, basically foreshadowing about what's going to happen in this chapter.
Yeah, is it more than that? Yeah. Is it showing that dragons, like, Tern is keeping so many secrets from Violet.
Mm-hmm.
Dragons don't really care for humans.
No, they know there is a bath they need. And the signet, the wards, and all of that is what it has been protecting the dragons.
Opposable thumbs.
Yes, that's brilliant. Well, I don't know, because you know that Tern, how he managed to pull the saddle by himself.
Shuffles, puts his feet in, and then like does a jiggle, and then it goes on until it clicks, and then he stops. So they're talking about the squad are talking about the dragons. She says, Rhiannon says, there's something off about that orange, and Varish seems so controlled. It's definitely an odd pairing.
Mm-hmm.
So tries to make you think, wonder why they're paired. And is it another case that magic likes everything in balance? Mm-hmm. You got an absolutely erratic dragon and Varish so controlled. Or is he controlling his dragon and he's causing the chaos?
I definitely think this Varish causing the chaos, because when he's with Violet and this rune touches her, he's in control. Mm. He's enjoying, like, pain. He's enjoying.
Yeah, he's sick, a really bad guy.
Yes, he's like, a psycho, definitely.
He's a psycho.
So that's the only reason that he losing control, because everything is inside, really deep. But then he goes to see Violet, and then little golden one.
Yeah,
again.
Just before we get to that, I want to call out this really weird line that Rhi says.
Mm-hmm.
He says, she says, he's smiling like he knows something that you don't. Then she said, is there some history with your mum, maybe? Some bad blood? And that, for me, like, totally jumps out. Yeah, I think, again, Rebecca Yarros has put it there to make us... it's just conversation. It's just something. And we know it's not that. We know that he's obsessed with Aunt and Anna. Mm-hmm. And later, just in that same group, in that same conversation, Violet says, he's obsessed with Andana. It's not a lie. But there must be some bad blood between Lilith and Varish. And obviously there's some bad blood between Tern and Solas, because Tern took out Solas's eye. So I've got this theory, or I've made this fan fiction in my head. I've filled in the gaps. I think... So Varish's signet is knowing the weaknesses of people.
Yeah.
I think he was trying to get to Brennan, possibly because there was a prophecy about the Sorengale children, the three children.
Mm-hmm.
And he was trying to get to Brennan. He knew Brennan's weakness was Naelin, because he read him.
Mm-hmm.
He used his signet. He then captured Naelin. We know he's capable of this because he captures Violet to get to Zayden. He captured, in my head, he captured Naelin and tortured him. And Tern wasn't having any of it. Tern went straight for Solas, took out his eye. Lilith, perhaps he did get to Brennan.
Mm-hmm.
Or Lilith knew he was after Brennan somehow, and that's why there's bad blood between her and Varish. It doesn't explain why Lilith, as general of Buzgaeth, would be comfortable with Panchek having Varish.
Mm-hmm.
But we also know that Panchek wants Lilith's job eventually.
Yes.
And we also know that Varish only answers to Panchek, so he's not in Lilith's line of command, so she possibly couldn't have done anything about it anyway.
Mm-hmm.
She was told by Melgrin that if Arish is moving to Buzgaeth and that's that, he reports to Panchak, he doesn't answer to you. So it feels like that line leads me to think that Varish was after Brennan and Varish did something to get to Brennan, which managed to piss off both Lilith Sorengail and Tern.
Mm-hmm.
That's my headcanon.
Okay. The only thing that I'm thinking about it is, is it possible then that Varish was already like venom or related to the venom, and he was aware about this prophecy and then keep an eye in there.
Yeah, maybe the tree. We don't know the full prophecy. It could be that Violet will be the queen of the gods or the queen of the human. You know what I mean? We don't know. So mm-hmm. at this point, we're not sure what he is. But Varish, if he is not venom at this point, he certainly dies as a venom. I am sure of it. Rebecca Yarros made a point of having him killed with a runed dagger. He, when Dane stabbed him, he came back to life. Or he didn't come back to life. He didn't die.
Yeah.
And then he needed to be stabbed with Violet's runed dagger to die. So there's that. There's something really, really weird in this dialogue here where Ten goes for Solas.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't say, without a dragon, you are dead. Because if the dragon dies, the rider dies. Mm-hmm. So Tern at least suspects at this point that if Solas dies, Varish will not die. And that's possibly because he suspects that he, or knows that he's venom. But the other thing is, I thought that this might have been what turned him. Because he realized he was not as powerful. His dragon was not as powerful as Tern, which mm-hmm. makes him not as powerful as Violet. And yeah. this is where he was like, no, I've been publicly humiliated. I'm not going to let that happen again. And then he turns venom. But it's that one line that says, without a dragon, you are no rider, that makes me think Tern suspects he's already venom.
I was thinking exactly the same, because it doesn't make sense. Without a dragon, you're not a rider. Without a dragon, he's supposed to be dead. So why he says that? It's one of the things about Tern that he says things that, you know, there's like something else there, but you don't know very well, unless until we get Onyx Store or the other books to have all the pieces together. It's the same like when he said to Violet, I know exactly what and who you are. Obviously, there's something, there's some meaning in those words, and this one is exactly the same.
Yeah. Exactly. So Varish gives in. Tern says, even the smallest dragon doesn't answer to the most powerful of humans, which you are not. Oh, the dragons just have their heads down. They're just keeping out of it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And Violet says, it's not necessary. And he says, it is necessary for me. And this is, again, where he's trying to... It's payback time, isn't it? I think he blames Varish somehow for whatever happened to Nalyn.
You think?
Yeah. And it comes back to maybe that theory that Varish and Atos are experimenting.
Mm-hmm.
Was Nalyn one of the experiments?
For me, it was more about Varish was the one who pushed Violet to the nearly to the burnout.
Oh, and yeah.
And obviously, if she dies, Tern will die. So for him, it was payback.
Yeah, that's a great point. Yeah, it could just be that. Yeah, that's a great point. I didn't think I'm like so quick to jump to Nalyn every time. It could just be that, or it could be that Rebecca wants you to think it's that. And actually,
could be.
Because he does
say, as a writer,
say,
you need to pull a different path and make you confused.
He does say at some point, doesn't he, that dragons hold grudges, humans can't.
Mm-hmm.
Like humans don't hold grudges. Anyway, this is great. This whole scene where he's. Publicly humiliated. He goes down on his knees. He makes him apologize. He makes him say that he has no power over her. He basically gives him an Anchorman script, and it's brilliant, the whole thing.
Lot of blood on the floor from Solas's neck. So you can tell that, it was really hard.
Yeah. Ooh, gross. Yeah. I'm even squeamish when it comes to dragon blood. Then we get a cutscene. We get a shift in pace. And Rhiannon is walking Violet out to fly to
the fly and field.
Samara. Mm-hmm. They are so similar. And this bit to me feels like so painful because Rhiannon is desperate for the truth and Violet is keeping it from her.
Yeah.
And Violet even kind of acknowledges it, doesn't she? She's like, you should cut me out because I've cut you out. But they end up having this big fight.
Shouting about how Rhi has no clue about what's outside. And Rhi's telling her, how am I going to know what is outside if you don't tell me? And it's like a really good fight between two good friends.
Yeah, oh, I'm just looking at it now, look. You didn't hold him, watch the light fade out of his eyes, knowing that there wasn't a physical thing wrong with him, but he was dying because Day lay eviscerated just a few feet away. Nothing I did in those moments matters. Gods, I held on to him so tightly. It's so horrible.
Yeah.
Rebecca Yarros is mean, making us relive it. But we get him back later, so it's all fine. Yeah.
But she's really mean.
Yeah.
I mean, from the interview in London, you can say that she enjoys
it. She enjoys it, yeah. I think a lot of authors do, like, making us feel stuff. So this is the other bit that I think we are, so that Rebecca Yarros told us we are supposed to question. Why is Buzgaeth so brutal? And we've said it before, but this is the half the excuse, half the reason that they are the weapons and this is the place. This place is the stone they use to sharpen them. For me, it's bigger than that. It's got to be that leadership are terrified that once people get a taste of the power, they will then become venom because they can channel. They'll realize they can channel from the ground.
Yeah.
Can anyone channel from the ground?
That's something that for me is not clear. It will be good if maybe somebody from Instagram, this is when we have more activity.
Can someone explain? Can anyone become Vanan?
Yeah, I thought it was just basically people that are riders or people that are learning like this magic. Mm. They are the only one who
feels like it can be anyone, doesn't it?
From what we heard about the flyers, when the flyer falls at bond to a griffon, then a Vanan can come and teach him maybe how to channel from the ground. So. Yeah,
it's funny that I just can imagine a sketch show. They're like waiting at the bottom of the river.
Yeah,
I mean, we've said this before, but I think we are supposed to think there's more to it than that.
Mm-hmm.
Because essentially, they're weakening themselves, aren't they? They're halving their army more. They're just losing so many cadets, so many potential riders.
And it's not just that, because all the tears they put away dragons that are being bond. So I don't know if after a year of bond, and they're still doing this like RSC, and somebody dies there, that dragon definitely it will die after a year of bond.
Mm-hmm.
So how dragons are allowing these things happens as well, because not just killing the riders, maybe some of the stuff will kill the dragons.
Yeah.
Not always, because there will be dragon there, it will get hurt.
Yeah.
And that's it.
I was thinking about this, and it's in the next chapter, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So we'll leave it to then. I was thinking about why the dragons would be okay with so many riders dying.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it comes down to the dragon and the rider. But I'll get onto it, because I did think that was odd myself. The last words that she finally admits to Rhiannon that nothing is all right. And she nearly tells Rhiannon, doesn't she, just before that. And then Varys arrives. So we know that we're starting to get that. And in the next chapter, she almost tells Mira. So we're starting to get the fact that she can't keep this struggling to herself. Yeah, yeah, she really needs to tell people the truth. Chapter 20?
Chapter 20. Last one.
The epigraph. In the years after my father died, I forgot what it felt like to be loved. Then I entered the quadrant and became the monster everyone needed me to be, and I never regretted it. But then you gave me those words, and I remembered. And nearly lost you too. I'm striving to be better for you, just like I promised. But I need you to know the monster is still there. screaming to use every ruthless part of me to get you back. Right. Lilith is Venon / was Venon. I don't know if she's still alive.
I think she is Venon.
You think she's still alive?
I think once you're a Venon, it's really difficult to not be in Venon anymore. It's like your mark forever, at least until this point.
Yeah, but I think she was cured of being a Venon just before she died. I am convinced that siphons are the key to returning the magic they stole. And once you return the magic you stole, you may not have all your soul back, but you are mortal.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I believe. So, it all comes down to the word monster. I did a quick search of my Kindle, of both books. The only time the word monster is used is in relation to someone we know or strongly suspect is a Venon, Varish.
Mm-hmm.
So, there's a few times that monster is used, just a couple of times, to describe Zayden. Obviously, he's not a monster, but he will become a Venon.
Mm-hmm.
So you can say monster in this situation relates to Zayden, who will become Venon. Monster is also used a few times when they're describing the Wyvern, when they're describing the Venon. So it, like in Resin, they say there's a load of monsters and the grey monsters, etc. Monster is also used when describing Varish.
Yes.
Who, again, like I said, we strongly suspect that he is Venon. I can't see any world where he was not Venon. If he isn't already at this point in the book, he will be by the time he dies. And in later on in the book, Violet's mom wants 3 minutes alone with Violet, and Zayden says she's a monster. He knows that she is Venon.
Yes, so it's clear the word monster is related to Venon.
Yeah, and that to me is like a cast iron bit of evidence that there was something going on with Lilith Soringale. And we know that something happened when she was pregnant. Did she channel from the source to stop her unborn baby from dying, potentially? Did she channel from the source that night that Violet's talking about on presentation, when she comes home with bloodshot eyes and she takes away Violet's fables because she's scared of her knowing the truth?
Mm-hmm.
There is a missive from Nolan to Lilith Soringale saying there is no cure, there is only control. We've always thought that is about somebody else, but I think it's for her.
Yeah.
It's the opposite of Varish, where I'm saying at this point, if he's not Venon by now, he will be by the time he dies. I think she has Venon in her, but she's in control. They talk about her being in control.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about Varish being in control. They talk about Zayden being in control. So all of the, and Brennan having control in the palm of his hand where the rune is. For me, like, the only times they talk about that is when they're talking about people who we know or strongly suspect have been or are Venon.
Mm-hmm.
And I think she is mortal by the time she dies. I think Sloane returns the magic and she dies. You don't think Lilith is dead, do you?
I'm waiting for our next storm. And if I don't see in the first pages there was a funeral or something, they made clear that she's dead, I would think she was a Venon and she's still alive.
Yeah, so we're both in the Venon camp.
I'm 100% sure that she is a Venon. The only thing that I'm not sure is if it's possible, because Sloane was having all the power, taking like all the magic.
Mm.
If that is going to be like the way to return somebody from the Venon to become human again, because it's running like the magic, it's taking the magic away.
Yeah.
Or because she's a Venon, she might come back.
Because she wasn't killed with a Tirish blade.
Yes. We have to wait for Onyx Storm for that.
Yeah.
But yeah, for me it's 100% that she was a Venon. Those red eyes that Violet mentioned, that's like the proof.
So many clues, isn't there?
Yes.
Yeah. And that just that word monster in this epigraph. does it for me.
And Chaidan says she is a monster, so I think maybe by that point she still have a burning thing. I don't know if she had absolutely under control, but yeah, she's not full human.
So Violet is at Samara.
Yes.
When she arrives, the infantry run around her. That's not important, but it is funny.
There's so many people running. They are the one who just go around her. And this one who say, Ryder! Like, be careful.
I don't know, but I've been told. That's what I imagine.
Yes. Do you think that maybe just because it's a rider, like, oh, a rider, then we have to be like, really respectful, we can't bother them.
No, I think they're just
like demigods.
Respect the rank, as Riddick would say. She sees Aiden walking towards her, her horizon. Nothing exists beyond him.
Yeah, he's talking to her mentally.
Yeah.
If you want to spend the night with me, then you have to kiss me, do it like you mean it.
You have to ask me to kiss you, because he said he wouldn't do it until she asked. There's some mentions of gravity and weightlessness here. She is weightless, he's her gravity.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a big theory that Violet's second signet has something to do with gravity.
I don't see it.
I don't either. No. But there is a lot of reference to gravity, but I think I remember some reference to the main love interest in The Things We Leave Unfinished being her gravity, being the female character's gravity.
Yeah.
So I think it's a turn of phrase that Rebecca likes as a love.
Yeah, so that's more like writer personality during the writing, because that's something really common as well. But for the stuff that you're supposed to know about the code or the person or what the writer needs for the signet, gravity, I don't see anything that she needed or something that she...
No, she's terrible at physics and she keeps falling off her dragon. So gravity is not something she needs. She needs like anti-gravity. She needs to be able to float.
Yes. And then we see Mira again after Satan and Violet are kissing.
Yeah.
They need to show off, like make it look real.
Do you think that Zane still wants to kill Mira at this point?
I don't think so. Because when they are kissing, Mira's the one who comes behind them. She says, okay, you make your point, right, or son? So it's like,
I think they're getting on.
Yes.
I think they're starting to get on.
Yeah, I think maybe they had kind of like a little competition just to see who's going to Violet spend the night with. And then Satan was like, yeah, she kind of had no chance. She's going to spend the
night
with me.
I'd like to get that point of view from Satan, that whole thing. Because I don't know, it feels to me like neither of them would admit it. But actually Mira's starting to like Ryzen. You got to remember that she hated him at that point in Fourth Wing.
Mm-hmm.
She asked him at that point, or she didn't ask him, she ordered him to find a way to make her keep her seat. Since then, Zayden has made Violet a saddle. So she's alive. She's still alive. Is Zayden slowly proving himself in Mira's books? And that's one reason why she's softened a bit to him, because she told him to find a way.
Mm-hmm.
And he did. She told him, she ordered him to get her out of there, to get Violet back to Buzgaeth safe before the Griffin flyers arrived. He did that. He made good on that. He made good on the saddle. Like, is he slowly proving himself to her?
I think so, because the last thing that she said to Zayden on Montserrat was, you want my trust, then make sure that she lives alive. And he did that, because he was saying that you need me to fight. But then she said, no, because I know that you're really powerful. Yeah. I need you to protect her.
Yeah, there is a bit in this where they're throwing knives at shit. And she says she can't trust him and you shouldn't trust him either. So she still doesn't fully trust him. She still thinks he's suspicious, but
it's a riot in the end. Yeah. So she just
I think she's starting to like him a little bit.
I think as well it's because she knows that Violet is in love with him. There's not just somebody that's having sex with us from time to time. Because when Satan is talking like the stuff, he's walking away. Mirror like, oh my God, you're not just fucking her. You're like, you're falling for him.
Yeah. She
knows.
Like, is it love? And then that's when she goes, ugh, let's go throw knives at shit. She does still consider him to be an enemy, though, because she's saying, you're fraternizing.
Yeah.
And then she says, with an officer. But normally you'd be fraternizing with the enemy, wouldn't you? Normally you'd be fraternizing with the enemy. Yeah.
Yes. And then when they're throwing knives to shed, there was some interesting things, I believe. Because they were talking about everything. But then one of the things that it comes like strawberry, like, really surprising was when Mira was saying that she was really good in poison as Brennan and Vi. And for me, it was like, oh, that's going to be maybe foreshadowing or something. She said that she's not really good with poison.
She's not good at poison.
So
yeah.
She can't get poison because she can't tell why.
Yeah, it jumped out at me as well. I'm not good at poisons. That's the one thing. It was a bit weird for her to say that. Can we go back to where they say, she says RSC is when most riders die.
Yeah.
But people don't notice because they split the squads up, so you don't notice the death count going up so much. And you were asking how the dragons were okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote exactly the same thing. And then I stopped reading and I was like, how could the dragons be okay with this? And you've got to remember that not every dragon is like 10. In fact, 10 feels rare. 10 has made a choice that Violet is his last rider.
Mm-hmm.
Something big happened with Nalin to get him to that point. Like, he is done, basically, with riders.
Mm-hmm.
Something big, like the rider turning venom, or the rider dying to save somebody else, maybe the rider becoming a god. There's several theories out there. And I flip-flop. I'm like a nightmare with these theories. Not every dragon is like that. And maybe the dragons are like, well, that one was too weak. If they died in interrogation, or if they died in, they're not fit to fight for Navarre. So maybe the dragons are, like, the dragons are better, think they're superior to the riders. I don't think all of them have this special bond but because we're in Violet's head and we're in Zayden's head, Sigil and Ten have those types of bonds, but you've got to remember the ones that like just let their riders fall and they don't catch them because they're like, well, they should have hung on. They shouldn't have been so weak.
It's not a good ride out.
Yeah. So maybe there's a lot of the dragons, or that there's an unspoken rule that if the rider dies while at Bas-Gaiath, it means they're not good enough and they can just bond with someone else next year.
So maybe they're just controlling the bond enough to, if the rider die, they just maybe suffer a little bit, but they're not going to kill it.
Yeah,
makes sense. You know, talking about Tern, it just came to my mind right now. Obviously, something bad happened with Nalin, because every time when the subject comes to Tern, he says that he doesn't want to talk about it. Because I know Rebecca Yarrow is a Star Wars fan, and some of the stuff there from Fort Wayne, Iron Friend, you can relate this straight away to Star Wars. So my first thing was always like, okay, maybe it's going to be another Anakin turning to Darth Vader. And then he said, no, it's dead. But it's not that, just they turn into a venom. And then I'm like, oh, well, it was dead to me anyway because of this. But when you were talking about it as well, I was like thinking, what about if I maybe because Nalin was trying to save Brennan, he turned into a venom. And then when Tern saw that Nalin turned into a venom, he was the one killing it.
His own rider.
Yes. And that's why he hates Brennan so much. And then he was not willing to bond to anyone else, and that way he feels so.
He bite his head off.
Yeah, that way he maybe feels so much pain.
But Sigil didn't do the same to Zayden.
We don't know how much Nalin had to turn into.
That's such an interesting theory. Oh yeah. Although at the moment, like I'm convinced that the general or the sage is General, it's got to be General Darmore. But right at the end, when the other general comes, he says a few things like, it hurts, doesn't it, nearing burnout, which makes you think of Nalan.
Yes.
I can't decide.
Both things fit. And the reason that the Nalan was Ben and his allies, because I think there's a turning point after those 6 years when everything happened, that the Venom start to like be more coordinated, more like an army.
Yeah.
And even Brennan say that in the beginning, the Iron Flame, that we've never seen this before. So it's like somebody's maybe training, giving like army training. So
that's Atos.
Like, that could be as well.
Stain's dad.
Colonel Atos.
And maybe Panchak.
Yeah. I heard a theory that Panchak is maybe the puppet master.
Yeah.
I don't see it, but it could be.
He seems like a dotty old fool, but he sent that note to, or he wrote a book. I don't know. We're going to get to it on another episode. He wrote that book that said, if you want to take out the flyers, go straight for Zolia Academy, because you take out years of flyers that are gonna join the army, the Poromish army.
Mm-hmm.
That's exactly what the Venon did.
Yeah.
We know that he wants Lilith Sorengale's job. We know that he wants Melgrin's job, ultimately. He's ambitious. He's I think he's a villain hiding in plain sight.
He was the one who said as well that if you had a problem with your wing leader or your superior, just like fix it yourself, don't bring it to me because you don't want me involved.
He stays kind of out of it, but he's also, Varish is reporting to him. Varish came to work for him. Something sus about Panchak.
Yeah, like we say in the beginning of this episode, everyone is traitors of Venom.
Everyone's an enemy. And in the blurb, it literally says enemies from outside and within the ranks.
Yes. Don't know Panchak's who to trust.
My money's on him. It's an excellent, excellent spot. Like,
technically, his own rider.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or an excellent theory, not a spot. Love it. Mira notices the dagger as well, and she says something like, I haven't seen daggers like these in a while. In... a while.
Mm-hmm.
What was she going to say? She changes her mind. Was she going to say, I haven't seen daggers like this in Navarre?
Since the revolution or the apostasy? She was a cadet when that happened, isn't it?
Yeah, in 6 years. I tend to think it's a place. And then she says, in a while.
Mm-hmm.
Has she seen those daggers behind enemy lines? Because we know that she went behind enemy lines and took out the battery. Was the battery full of these daggers?
Yeah.
Because Aiden had been supplying them. I haven't seen daggers like the... You'd think that she would report that. I haven't seen daggers like these in 6 years, in... don't know.
Yeah.
What was she going to say? But she changes her mind and she just says, in a while. We find out so much information about the wards here because Violet realises that she's basically a walking ward. So this outpost has one of the biggest power supplies for the wards.
Mm-hmm.
Wards are like an umbrella. They need a boost at ground level because they get weak towards the ground. And Violet said, with the alloy, and Mira adds, and the dragons.
Yeah.
So what are the dragons doing?
I don't know if the dragon itself, they act maybe as a booster, because the dragons are also magic as well. So maybe keeping the dragons inside made the world stronger.
Maybe they have to breathe onto it, like an iron flame. From time to
time, maybe.
Maybe need to set the alloy alight in an iron flame, like...
Yeah.
The instructions for the wards. Don't know. There's something there, though, that is just glossed over.
Yes.
We find out they tried to extend the wards to Athbine, but they couldn't. Who was behind that? That was Colonel Atos in charge of that mission to try and extend the wards. And then he realised they couldn't be extended out to Athbine, and that's why he sent them to Athbine. That's why he picked that outpost. at the end of Fourth Wing. I'm overthinking it, 100%. Sometimes Mira pulls the wards with her. Sometimes she can manifest, but has to be close to an outpost. Has Mira got some link to Dragonchild? We find out later in this chapter that the alloy is Taladium, and it, and there's dragon shells in it, and the magic stays in the shell for a lot longer.
Yes, and Barley asks, dragon shells? Yeah, because they are made of metal. That's something curious as well.
Yeah, but the fact that the magic stays in them long after the dragon has hatched makes me think that they're part of this research of the cure for venom and stuff.
Yeah.
I feel like Mira might have some connection to Dragon Charles. She puts up a sound shield and she tells Violet to be quiet because in case curious ears are listening. So she thinks Mira's paranoid. Do you think there's any, she thinks there's also enemies everywhere. She's like us. She thinks everyone's an enemy.
Yes.
But she doesn't believe in venom yet.
And this was the first try of Barley trying to tell her what was going on. Mm-hmm. The first thing that comes to Mira's mouth is like, you need to go to have a rest because now you're talking nonsense. Yeah, I think Mira was suspecting like, why is so much interest about those wards? There's something going on. She knows very well Violet.
Mm.
What's going on here? Why so much interest about this?
She saw the wyvern and she says later to Zayden, you're right not to trust me because I nearly told her. When she first saw her, all she wanted to say was, Brennan is alive, Brennan is alive, Brennan is alive. And that is really hard for her to keep that a secret. I totally get that.
Yes, but when she was saying that Brennan and Mira, they were really close mm-hmm. when they were growing. So if somebody deserves to know that Brennan is alive, it's Mira.
Mira. Yeah. So then there's a really sad thing. Mum has never seen me as anything but a liability. I think that feels really sad for me. And I wonder if that's because somehow, while Lilith says she loves her children and everything, does she somehow blame Violet for herself turning Brennan because she did it to save her child?
I don't know. Could be maybe if she turned into a Brennan, she had to control their emotions because maybe are the emotions the one who pushed him to be a Brennan, like anger or scare. Again, another Star Wars reference. When you're going to turn to a Sith, you turn it because your emotions. So you start to feel like being scared, then being angry, and then from angry, you channel this dark power.
Yeah.
So maybe that's why Lilith, she tried always be like emotionless. Because that was like maybe the way to control, not channeling from the ground.
Then she cuts her, like she says also, Zayden's in the operations center. That's the reason why Sigale can see 10, but Zayden seems to be working in this like air traffic control center, I don't know, where he's just working on his own. Maybe it's a strategy place. Maybe we need to research what an operations center is in the Royal Air Force or something. But she says the operations center, that's, and then Violet cuts her off and says, above my clearance. I don't know what she was going to say again. Violet's like, and Mira cuts herself off in this situation. They never finish a sentence. Okay, then they're back in bed. The final part of the scene.
So Zayden, shirtless, goes next to her, and then she notices that he has a new scar next to his heart.
Mm-hmm.
A scar that she didn't notice before.
Yeah, we know where that's from because we've read the book.
Yes, and this part is just, it's a little bit weird because obviously they two, they want to be together. They love each other. They just want to be more, but at the same time, they build this wall between them.
Yeah, it's nice. I just kind of wrote, isn't it nice that they're just not fighting for once? This whole book does feel so angsty with Violet and Zayden. And I get it. They're traumatized. They're trying to figure this stuff out. But it's just nice, this bit.
Yes, because now you see the violets asking questions and Zaydan actually is answering. So I think maybe now is when Zaydan is like, finally, she's asking me stuff that I can say.
And he tells her, you're allowed to have secrets. That's the point. I'd prefer they not risk everything I've worked towards for the last few years or your life. It's interesting, the order of priority there. And yes, I'm still not happy about the scribe. I won't withhold information that could change how you make decisions, and I ask the same of you. Do you think the fact that he is in Tinzik would change the way she makes decisions? Do you think he's pushing the limits here of what he's actually committed to?
I think for the start, Zaydan has said before that he is not someone that will take advantage about what she's doing or all that kind of stuff. I don't think that he will use the intention thing with her when he starts to realize that he's in love with her. I think maybe from that point he's not doing it because he wants to keep it real. He doesn't want to make it like himself the one who's making it happen.
Yeah, I agree with that, but I don't necessarily mean will he use it on her. I mean, would that affect the decisions she made?
I think he will try to trust and violate decision as well, but I don't think he will try to influence more than he should.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah. The other thing that caught my attention about this scene is when he says to her, I know exactly who you are, Violet. I was thinking it could be that second meaning, something that he knows about Violet and we don't.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Zaydan is the master of secrets.
Yep, I know who you are, the third brother.
It sounds kind of like the same thing that Eternal says to her and Threshing. So for me, it was like, ooh.
Part of the prophecy. We get a reference to the Tirish knots as well. And he's like, culture violence, which again is one of my favorite lines. Like tiny little throwaway lines like that. I love them.
Yeah.
And we get a dream. A mention of the dreams of the sage taking Zaydan from her. That's it?
Yeah.
It's actually relatively not a lot in those chapters, but also links to big theory, potential clues for big theories that might materialise later in the book, like Lilith being a Venon. Maybe the Venon aren't all bad. Yeah, some big things, but not a lot. Unless we missed a load, let us know if we missed.
To be honest, I think, at least for me, from the first time when I read Iron Flame, not many stuff started going on to maybe you are in the end of part one. So I had to force myself a little bit to like, okay, just keep going.
Because I was saying it gets so good.
Yeah, but in fourth wing, I think it was just before Threshing when I start to feel like Hawk in the book. And this one, I don't start to feel it. I was just like, oh my God, okay. Keep reading. And then by the end of part one, like, oh, what's going to happen? What's next? And then I start to be in the book. So I understand why, some people say that Iron Flame is not as good as fourth wing.
I love it. I think it's full of clues. I love it.
Yeah.
Okay, so that brings us to the end of our deep dive. I just wanted to pull back on, remember in the first series where we used to do a little bit of a who would win on the mat? We didn't see Professor Carr in this stretch of chapters, but I want to know who you think would win in a good old-fashioned hand-to-hand, no signets, or when you think about Professor Carr, it's no signets. Because he totally has a shit signet. Who would win on in a good old fashioned hand to hand between Varish and Carr?
I would put my money on Varish because the guy, I said him before, I think he was working as a cleaner. Like, he's the one who taught you to
mopping the floors.
Yes. No, but it's a way to say that he's the one who made sure there are no witnesses or there are no proof or the secret is sealed. So he's really ruthless. He's a guy that is a psycho. think the guy's a psycho. And Carr, so far, he's just a professor, basically.
He is, but I think Varish can only beat the shit out of somebody if they're strapped to a chair. I'm not sure he'd be particularly fast.
Yeah. So you go for Carr.
I don't know.
Carr didn't show any fighter skills. So, I mean, it's a rider in the end.
Yeah.
So they might know at least the basics, both of them.
Well, they managed to survive the quadrant and graduate.
Everything,
and,
yes.
Yeah. I do think Carr would win, yeah. Yeah. Do you think Carr would win? I think Varish would not be able to not use his signet because he obviously relies on it to work out people's weaknesses.
Yes, the other thing is that I think he will cheat as well.
Yeah,
so well, he will come with something. Cheat.
There isn't really a cheating, is there? There's only winning, is what Mira says.
Exactly.
Just before Violet crosses the parapet.
So you will go for Carr?
Yeah.
No, okay. Go for Carr, go for Varish.
Yeah.
Maybe people can decide.
Let us know in the comments. Okay, so that brings us to the end of our deep dive of chapter 17 to 20 of Iron Flame. We hope you haven't spotted too many things that we've made mistakes on or too many things you want to correct us on, but we always want to be corrected. So please let us know in the comments. While you are here, I am going to make a shameless plea for you to leave a review on the app that you are listening to us on right now. Any reviews will help us reach new people. We want to grow this community. We are loving the level of chat and engagement we're getting on Instagram, so the more the merrier. We have recently fallen into a Daddy Soringale has the cure for venom rabbit hole, and we have dragged so many people down with us. We're essentially having a party at the bottom of this rabbit hole now. So please take the time, if you can, to give us a review on your favorite podcast app.
That's all for today's episode. Just remember, before you're watching us on YouTube, just like, subscribe. Also, you can follow us on social media. The name is Faithfully Fantasy Pod, where you can join us for fun stuff.
Yeah.
When we are more active, it's on Instagram, so you can join us.
Yeah,
there.
Don't just follow us. Come and chat to us. Give us your theories, however crackpot they are. We want to know what you think is going to happen in Onyx Storm. Thank you so much for listening to us today, and we can't wait to share more thoughts on chapters 21 to 24 next week.
And remember, new episodes every Tuesday. So see you next week.
Bye.